Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The bathrooms are across the hall and up a small flight of stairs if anybody needs those. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple action. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, part A, which is, any other time I can tell it to you. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And I'd like for you to help me welcome our panel. We have Ryan and Allie. So I will read the first paragraph, which will be found on page XXVI, from Doctor's Opinion. And then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, page XXVI. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may of course mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Ryan?
Oops. Hi. Guess we don't need that alarm.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi. It's good to be here tonight. Step one's one of my favorite to talk about, but I'm a little nervous, so we'll see how this goes. I know prior to coming to AA, this idea that there was something physically wrong with me had not particularly occurred to me. I think I was so focused on the, like, I just have to stop drinking, that I really wasn't paying too much attention to what might be going on, and nobody had presented me an opinion. I remember in rehab, they started to present this disease theory and stuff, which I thought was strange, but when AA, when I came to AA and they started talking to me about allergy, I thought it was a little bit weird, because when I drank, I didn't break out into hives. I didn't need an EpiPen or any of those things that I generally associate with allergies. I didn't sneeze, but this lady that I know, she had me look up what the definition of an allergy was, and it said that it was an abnormal physical reaction. That the alcoholic, once they started to drink, they just wanted more booze. And apparently that's not normal. I didn't know that. Apparently, non-alcoholics, when they drink, they start drinking, and maybe they get like that little woozy feeling or start to get a little tipsy or whatever, and they're like, woo, I've had enough. I had this roommate quite a while ago, and we would go out drinking, and she would drink like one or two apple martinis and just be having a grand old time, and she was good, and I'm just sitting there thinking like, I'm going to need a lot more to feel like that. You know, I was not a person who was satisfied with one or two drinks, and where it says that this explains a lot of things for which we cannot otherwise account, it did explain a lot of things to me. I know a lot of people that when they drank, if they couldn't go out and get super, super drunk, they weren't drinking. Me, I had this great obsession that I was gonna have two or three drinks. I was desperately trying to like live a normal life. I had a husband and a house and a job and all those things, and I wanted to keep all of those things. So when I sat down on a Tuesday night, the intention was not to go to party it up. The intention was to have two or three drinks to relax and just have a good evening and then go to bed. And what I could tell you is that time and again, I would sit down to have those two or three drinks, and then I'm like drinking through everything in the house and perhaps going out to the store for more, you know? So this idea that once I start to drink, something physical is triggered and I just want more starts to make sense to me. And I could tell you that I was just wanted to get drunk all the time, but even then I can see something weird, because there were definitely times when I was the person who was set out to go out and get drunk. It's Friday night, we have permission to have fun, let's go out and get down. And so on those nights I would go out, I would drink as much as I want, but even then I can see something a little bit weird going on, because I would get drunk. I would get so drunk that the world is spinning, I can barely stand straight, I've probably puked, and yet I still want more alcohol. Why? You got what you wanted, Ryan. You know, because I've got this physical reaction to alcohol that other people don't get. That once I start to drink, I just want more, you know? And that does not happen to me with other beverages, you know? Like, I never sat down one day to have a Diet Coke, you know? And the next thing I know, the entire 12-pack is gone. You know, it just didn't happen. There was something unique and special about booze, and that's that allergy. It made sense. And I also really like this part where it says it did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted in life, that we were full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. I can definitely relate to this idea of being maladjusted to life. I was very aware from a very young age that I wasn't quite right, that other people were somehow different than me, that I didn't quite fit in. I was very aware that I was sometimes in full flight from reality. You know, I just did not want to deal with stuff. I wanted those uncomfortable feelings to go away. So yes, a checkout would be nice. Thank you very much. But even in those scenarios, this mental stuff going on, that doesn't explain why I was drinking so much. And the reason I know that is by paying attention to non-alcoholics. Like, I know a lot of non-alcoholics that are definitely maladjusted to life. I can give you a list of them just from my work. It's fun, you know? I know some non-alcoholics that are in full flight from reality or mentored effectives or struggle with a lot of the same things that I did.
but they didn't drink like I did. They did not have the same problems with booze. I know this lady, my old boss, whatever, she's got a little mental defective, whatever, maladjusted to life. But she was having a week, and she was sitting there talking about how she couldn't wait to get home to have a couple of glasses of wine, right? Ooh, alcoholic. No, you want to know why? Because she went home, she had one or two glasses of wine, relaxed, and then she went to bed, you know? So clearly there is something different going on. And so when they talk about this allergy stuff, I'm like right on board. I'm like, that is totally me. Thank you.
I'm Allie. I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me?
No.
Yes? No? Okay. Well, yes. Okay. I really, really like this section. I feel like when I finally got into the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, this was the game changer for me, was the doctor's opinion. Because, like Ryan had said, I'd been to rehab multiple times, and I don't know. I don't know if they talked about it affecting or it being like something wrong with the body, but I never heard that. I don't know if my ears were open to it yet, but I had never heard that before. And part of my story is I'm also an addict, so for me to believe that I was an alcoholic too was really hard for me, because I wasn't someone that drank every single day, and I didn't, like, well, I didn't have a house, but I didn't lose my house. I didn't, you know, alcohol didn't bring me to my knees in those sort of ways, like the brown paper bag alcoholic, and, you know, I would go to rehab for drugs, but when I was there, they would tell me that I was an alcoholic, and, because they would ask me how many drinks do I take when I drink, and I would say, well, at least 10. And then they would be like, what? 10? That's not normal. That's alcoholism. And I'm like, what? No, I'm just having a good time, you know? It was normal for me, you know? But I just never really thought that I was an alcoholic at all, except sometimes when I would, like, have a really bad night, and I know I'd be like, I'm an alcoholic, man. It's like, that's what I would do. But then the next day, I'd be like, no, that was just the tequila, you know. But, yeah, I really liked this part of it because, like I said, I had never heard of it being a physical thing before, like something being wrong with us. And I don't know, and it was a doctor, and I like to think that I'm really smart. So, like, knowing it's from a doctor, like, yes, I get that. But for me, hearing that about the allergy, how it affects our body, I can just relate even from my first drink. Was that loud?
No,
okay.
You're good.
Because my first drink, I took, what was it? It was Aristocrat. I always want to say Aristocats because I have a daughter of 2 years old, so we watch that a lot. But my first shot of it, I didn't just drink one shot and then I was done and, you know, like, hung out with the girls or whatever. I got blackout drunk that night. Like, literally, once I felt that warmth, I was like, oh, that's what they're talking about. And I was ready to go. And that's just how it's always been for me when I drink. I just never want to drink just to feel a little tingly, you know, that little tipsy feeling. Like Ryan said, her great obsession maybe was to control, like, to two or three, control your drinking. But for me, I think always from the beginning, like, my goal when I started drinking was I want to go to oblivion. And that's how I always was when I drink. I heard someone say the other day that they drank not to get a little tipsy, they drank to shut down the whole committee. And that's what it was for me. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. All right, the second reading is XXVIII. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
Right. All right. So, chronic alcoholics, manifestation of allergy. So if basically what it's saying to me is that if I get this phenomenon of craving, that once I start to drink, I don't want to stop, there's not an off button, then I'm an alcoholic. It does not occur in other people. And that for me, then I can't use alcohol. Nice. So don't drink. Isn't that fun? Ooh, sorry. Gosh, I have a hard time. I know, right? All right. Yeah.
You can pass if you need to. Go ahead. Okay. I'm Allie. I'm an alcoholic.
Allie.
Is it this? Okay, so I like where it talks about like these chronic alcoholics versus like normal drinkers, because I have a little story about that. Those people amaze me. They really do. These people that don't, their body doesn't react like ours. So one time I was going to New York City with my boyfriend at the time, Johnny, and it's questionable whether he was an alcoholic or not. I don't know. He drank really crazy, y'all, but I guess he's a normie, so it's, I don't know. But anyways, we went to New York City, or we drove up to Long Island, and we were going to go to New York City for the day, and we took the train to get there, and on the train, we brought, like, I don't even know, like a 24-pack. Like, we brought so much beer, and because they you can drink on the trains. And so we were like, yeah, we're going to drink on the train. Like, let's get tore up, you know? So we drank as many beers as we could on that train. And, you know, don't break the seal. Like, don't pee. Like, I wanted to be as fucked up as possible. And then we got there. And then we got to New York City. And then we were going to go see the, oh, goodness, if I can remember, the Christmas Story at... what is that? Starts with an M. That big arena or that big Madison Square Garden. Yes. Okay. So we were going to see the Christmas Story at Madison Square Garden. And we had to stop drinking, you know, to go to the show. And then the alcohol there, it cost like what, like $8 a drink or something. And, you know, me and Johnny were broke as hell. So we weren't going to do that. But I remember the whole time I was in the, like, watching the show, I couldn't even pay attention. Like, all I wanted to do was drink. And I remember when we left the show, they're like, it was such a good show, right? Wow, that was amazing. New York. Like, it's like, yeah, it was really great. So, like, let's go get a drink. And then they were like, no, like, let's keep walking around. They made me walk around the city all day without getting another drink. And the whole time, all I wanted to do was just drink. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter that I was in New York, this big, beautiful city. Like, this was my dream to go here. I never got to go there before. And all I could think about was, like, oh, there's Applebee's right there. Let me get tore up in there. You know what I mean? I could be in Hampton, Virginia drinking, and it'd be no different. But that's what it is for me. Like, that craving is so intense. I can't even see what's going on around me. Like, New York City can't catch my attention. I need that next drink. So finally, when we got back to Long Island, I ended up drinking that entire night and dressing up as Batman or whatever. So I got to get my booze in, but yeah, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Allie.
All right, I might have a little bit together now. Actually, as Allie was talking, it was reminding me of this story a guy told me where he compares the allergy to alcohol to like an allergy to peanuts. Right? If I have a peanut allergy and I break out into hives, or maybe I have to have an EpiPen, whatever it is, he starts talking about how you should not eat the peanut. But where we start to have a really big problem is if you have that same person who's got an allergy to peanut, and the next thing you know, we find them in a closet with like a jar of Jif, like just cramming it down their throat. You know, you need to stop eating the peanut. And my first sponsor, she said, the insanity of alcoholism isn't that when you drink too much. She said the insanity of alcoholism is that stone cold sober, you will pick up a drink and do it again. And that's where this whole thing where it starts to talk about Like, if I can't drink safely, then I need to not do it. But if I've got this habit, that's what starts to screw me, you know? And that's the problem I found myself in. I had another roommate, oddly enough. We were all at the same time. We had, like, the moderate drinker, the girl who liked to drink a lot, and then the alcoholic. But my other roommate who liked to drink a lot, we would, like, go out and drink together. We would go out to the bars, stay up late, all that stuff. And you would think that the both of us would be in the same boat. But something really interesting happened to her. She met a guy, and she fell in love, and she realized that she was drinking too much. And you know what she did? She stopped drinking so much, you know? She hadn't formed the habit like I had, because I met a guy. I fell in love. I realized I was drinking too much. And you know what I did? I just kept right on going, you know? And then all these things that started to happen as time went on, they say alcoholism is progressive, and what I can tell you is that did indeed progress for me. The frequency that I drank started to increase, the quantities that I was drinking was off the chain, right? Found that I had the habit and I could not break it. And there was a couple years that I was obsessed with not drinking. There's another guy, he says, like, if you want to ruin your drinking, just try to control it. And that's what I did for a couple years. It was terrible. The worst couple years of my life trying to get that stuff under control. Holy crap. It was awful. And I was doing everything I could think of to try to break that habit. I went to see doctors because I was really depressed at that point, and I figured that if I was happier, then I wouldn't drink so much. So they gave me a nice little set of antidepressants and something to help me sleep, because my mind just kept right on going. And I would take those pills and I would continue to drink. For a while there, I thought maybe exercise was the answer, you know, get the endorphins going, feel better. What that would look like is I would come home and I would walk around the block once, and I would walk around the block twice, and the crap in my head went from a 10 to an 8, and I just had to have a drink. Just one, mind you. You know how that went. You know, at one point I resorted to post-it notes. I put one on the bathroom mirror and one on the door, reminding myself, do not drink today. Took them down in less than a day. They didn't work, you know. But mostly I was always going to quit tomorrow. That was my great obsession. You know, a little bit later on, we're probably going to read it. It talks about not being able to differentiate the true from the false. And that was the lie that I believed for years, that I was going to drink today and I was going to quit tomorrow. I did that one over and over and over again. It wasn't like the post-it notes where I realized it wasn't going to work and took them down in a day. I was just beating one into the ground. And then I started to find those other things happening, losing their self-confidence. I started to get this little voice in the back of my head that was like, you know you're full of crap, Ryan. You're not quitting this stuff. But I just kind of ignored it, because what do you do with that? That's kind of like an unfathomable thing to me. Reliance upon things human, you know. All those trips to the doctors, you know, I started to lose faith in that. They weren't helping me stay sober. Some people don't like it when I say this, but meetings, some people stay sober very well on meetings. I found that 6 meetings a week just got me drunk, you know. Some magical sponsors. I had a magical sponsor, that lovely human. She kept me sober for approximately a month, you know. Yeah, it was terrible. There was like nothing on this green earth that was going to prevent me from taking a drink, you know, and there was just this utter realization that this is how it's going to be the rest of my life, you know. Problems, all these problems that were astonishingly difficult to solve, those things were occurring in my life, you know. I was systematically destroying everything good in my life, and I had absolutely no idea how to fix any of that. You know, and that's what the obsession did to it, this inability to leave it alone. So, thank you.
Thanks
very
much. Sorry. Alrighty. The third reading is on page XXVIII also, starting with men. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that, while they admit is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with the firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
Do I go first this time? Do I got it together? All right, looks like we're switching it back since after that awkward pause I gave you last time. So men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Like, heck yeah. I know we like to like torture ourselves with like, why am I drinking like this? Is it my mom? Is it my dad? Maybe it was those bullies in school or the mean boy or my job or whatever it is. No, I like the way it feels. You know, I used to call it liquid freedom, you know? So I remember one time I used to walk around very uncomfortable. I had a lot of noise in my head. As a matter of fact, I used to work in a bookstore. I distinctly remember like watching the people like walking around shopping and wondering what it was like inside their head. You know, like, is there rainbows? Are there butterflies? It's just nice because they just seem to be having a good old time browsing along. And there I'm thinking like, come live a day in my head and let's see how you do. I like to joke that my mind needed theme music. You know, and I didn't know how to shut that off. And as a matter of fact, for a long time, if you had asked me what my problem was, you know, I would have given you the long list of normal stuff, but I wouldn't have had said anything about alcohol causing me problems. What I would have told you about alcohol is that I absolutely loved to drink. I remember one time being a little deep into a bottle of wine, you know, and the that feeling of tension in my chest just kind of disappearing, you know, and I can relax again and I can breathe again and the lights got a little bit softer and all of those good things. And I remember thinking to myself, if I could just feel like this all the time, everything would be okay. And once again, I later learned that that's not normal, but that's definitely why I was drinking. I liked how it felt. It is that simple. And so I did indeed eventually realize that it was harming me. And this idea of not being able to differentiate the true from the false, I mean, people have a lot of different examples, but I see that a lot with the alcohol. I see that a lot with the number of times that I was believed that I was going to have two or three. Like, how many times did I tell myself that? Like, over and over again. Like, why did you believe that, Ryan? Or the whole quit tomorrow thing. Like, how many times did I tell myself that I was going to quit tomorrow? And I, like, totally, wholeheartedly believed those lies. Like, why? I have got hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of examples that, no, Ryan, you're not going to keep it to a couple of drinks. No, Ryan, you are not going to wake up and magically quit tomorrow. You know, why did I believe this? You know, insane, crazy. I had a psychology professor that defined insanity as believing a lie. And if that is the definition, then I was totally out of my mind. I did not think that my alcoholic life was the normal one. I didn't surround myself with a lot of alcoholics. As a matter of fact, I had a non-alcoholic husband. We had like a fairly normal life. And I was like desperately trying to fit into this normal life. And it was very apparent that stuff was weird was going on. And I know that because I tried to hide my drinking, right? If I thought it was normal, there wouldn't have been booze hidden in the closet. You know, there was this desperate attempt for other people not to know because I was aware of how abnormal it was. However, it was normal for me, you know? That's just the way it was. You know, I was going to go to the store, I was going to fight with the drink, I was going to sneak into the closet, we were going to have a crazy time on Thursday morning, me trying to get all the empties out of the house before anybody knew, all that kooky stuff, that was absolutely normal for me. And so, this is one of the favorite lines, right? Restless, irritable, and discontented.
Can't sit still no matter where I am. It's not quite right. Sitting there watching TV, don't like that. Go out on the porch, don't like that. You know, wherever I am, not good. Irritable, easily annoyed. You know, somebody asked me for something and all of a sudden I'm like through the roof. It happens to me a lot at work still. You know, people come up to me and they want something, you know, because it's my job to do it, and I'm all ticked off at them, like, why are you bothering me? I got stuff to do. You know, irritable, discontented, it's not quite right, nothing's good enough, you know, and there's like thousands of manifestations of that, man. I'll do that with like my shoes, you know, can't get them right. Why are boots so hard? I don't know, right? So I walk around feeling like this. Restless, irritable, and discontent. They're talking about that when I'm sober, not when I'm drunk. And what do I want? I want a drink. You know, I want the ease and comfort that comes from drinking alcohol. And so I do. I take that drink with the lie in my head that I'm going to control it, right? Like all those other people are able to do it. And what happens to me? I get that physical craving. I drink way too much. Here we've done it again. And I just get caught up in that cycle because I'm an alcoholic. And for a long time, I kind of wondered, I noticed that over the years, the obsession to drink got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think I kind of figured out why. Because if I'm sitting there restless, irritable, and discontent, right, and I go to my favorite friend booze and I take that drink and I go through what they call the well-known stages of a spree, probably gonna lie to some people, hurt some people, maybe screw some stuff up, and I wake up the next morning, what happens to the level of my restlessness, irritability, and discontent? Probably bigger. You know, what's gonna happen to my need for alcohol? Probably bigger, you know, but I'm an alcoholic who can't stop. Not because I don't want to, not because I haven't hit bottom, not because something bad enough hasn't happened to me, because I don't know how to stop. Literally do not know how to stop. And so I just come to the desire again. And what do? Hurt some people, lie to some people, maybe it's steal a little. Who knows what's gonna happen? What happens the next morning? What happens to that level of restless, irritable, and discontent? You know, what happens to that need that I have for alcohol? Bigger and bigger and bigger. And so what happens? Very little hope of recovery. Just accumulating it. Worse and worse and worse. Sicker and sicker and sicker. Doomed. Beyond human aid. Thanks. That's
right. Thank you, Ryan.
Happy note.
I'm Allie. I'm an alcoholic. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Yes, that sounds right. Like I was saying, that first drink that I took, that aristocrat, not cat, when I felt it go down, that warmth, oh my gosh, and I opened up my eyes and I'm just like, I am here. Like, I am finally here with all these people right now, you know? And I don't know what it is when I start drinking, y'all. Somehow, I don't know if it actually happens physically on the outside, but internally, y'all, I become Kim Kardashian. Like, parts of my body are growing, you know what I mean? And I am feeling as sexy as ever, you know? And I'm just feeling so good. I feel so witty. My timing is perfect. You know, everything about me is so much smoother and so much cooler. And that's what I've always wanted my whole life. Like, thinking about your theme song, like my theme song back in, like, this was happening in high school. It was just like, so come Iris and black my eyes. Like, I was just really depressed, really angsty. I hated everyone. You know what I mean? Like, all the cool kids that were drinking and stuff, like, because I wasn't, like, on their level. I was never going to drink. I was just going to smoke weed. My dad was an alcoholic. You know what I mean? I'll show him by smoking weed. I don't know. But those kids, I hated them so much. But once I took those drinks, y'all, I was ready, like, yeah, talking, joking, this, what's up, how you been, you know? And they're like, what's with this girl? Yeah, that night, like, I love alcohol because that first night, y'all, I ended up kissing two different guys, and I was someone that was very, very shy. Like, my first kiss was that year. And I ended up kissing two different guys, and one of them was the hottest guy in the school, Austin. And I was like, yes, yes, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So, yeah. And, you know, when they talk about the restless, irritable, and discontent, I mean, I can relate to that so much. And I feel like I felt that way before I even took my first drink. But, you know, as you can hear from some of my shenanigans, I would get into many shenanigans when I would drink. You know, little fist fights on the beach, you know, fighting some guys. Oh, gosh, let's see, what else? Just crazy, just hood rat, just what you know, horrible things. And I was just a mess. I have to have people babysit me. You know what I mean? So yeah, I wake up the next morning wherever I was, hopefully with clothes on, and just be like, oh no. I'd be like, just whoever my friend, I'd be like, Nikki, please don't tell me what I did last night. And you know, and there it would be. There'd be the pictures, the this, the that, and then just that anxiety. Like, I gotta show myself at school or show up to school the next day and everyone see, you know. So that was on top of everything, like you had said. And I don't know, I can just relate. So I was just ready for that next drink, that next time to let go. And that was the obsession for me. I don't know. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. So continuing on to the very next paragraph. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that that required to follow a few simple rules.
Okay, so doom, that's kind of where we left off last time, huh? Yeah. So what happened to me is I was indeed that doomed person. I was indeed that person who had failed over and over again. I think it's up here. Oh, well. Talks about the type of alcoholic who they had come to regard as hopeless. Like, everybody had pretty much given up on me. Nobody wanted to be around me. I have what I like to call a dear sweet mom. You know, those moms that, like, help you out no matter what. Can I move back home? Need a little bit of money? Whatever it is, over and over again. That dear sweet mom, she was like, yeah, you need to leave. Yeah, it was very painful and hard for her, as I sit here giggling about it. But she was actually very nice about it. She looked up the phone numbers of Oxford houses and stuff for me, and she gave me like 2 weeks to figure that stuff out before she gave me the boot. I'm not gonna lie, I did not even bother calling any of those Oxford houses, because apparently you have to be sober to be there. And you know, who are we talking about? You know, and so it was just kind of like this very desolate, despairing time for me, because I realized like that literally was how it was going to be for the rest of my life. Sometimes we like to like threaten alcoholics with death when they come in here. Like, if you don't quit drinking, you're going to die. Or I hear a lot of new folks doing like, if I don't quit drinking, I'm going to die. And I'm going to be honest with you, I would have gladly welcomed death. I would like frequently fantasize about like random giant space rocks falling out of the sky and squishing me, kind of like Looney Tunes, you know? That sounded really, really good to me. What sounded horrifying to me is living that way for the rest of my life. I was a couple weeks shy of my 30th birthday. My great-grandmother had lived to be 98 years old. You do the math. So I did. So I got a couple of plans. I remember laying in bed that night, I got a couple of plans in AA. As you probably have noticed from me talking, that I had been in AA and continued to get drunk, in spite of some of the taking some what we'll call some of the suggestions, you know. And so I had this idea in my head that I was going to go back to AA and give it one more try. Now, I wasn't too hopeful about that, to be quite frank. And the reason I know I wasn't too hopeful about that is because I had a plan B and a plan C. Plan B was I was going to move to Mexico and stop caring. Yes, I was going to get a sombrero. I was going to get margaritas. I'm pretty sure I would have had to prostitute myself to survive, but I was okay with that because we weren't going to care anymore. I was not an exciting drunk. I spent most of my drinking sitting on the couch in front of a TV, very sad. So let's be real, I was not going to move to Mexico and have fun. Plan C, which was far more likely, was I was in the process of a divorce, and in that process I got a little bit of cash. I was going to take that cash, I was going to get myself a hotel room, I was going to drink as much as I could until every dime of that money was gone, and then I was going to kill myself. And prior to that I said, let's go back to A and gave it one last try. And I remember sitting in a meeting once, and there was this lady, she said, if there are 5 things I do in a day, I'm probably not going to get drunk. And I'm not sure, I don't really think that there's anything special about these 5 things, perhaps, but I latched on to it. And she said, pray in the morning, go to a meeting, read the big book, talk to another alcoholic, and pray at night. And so about 5 days later, it took me a little time to get it together, I set out to do those things. And I remember, I did. I remember that day, that magical sponsor who couldn't get me sober. I remember calling her that day and saying to her, I'm finally willing to go to any lengths, you know. And she said, come on over. And so I went and picked her up, and we went to this meeting clear out in Richmond. It was a giant anniversary meeting. Oh my God, it was so terrible, because I'm not going to lie, I drank a little bit that day. I was trying so hard not to, but it just wasn't working. So basically, I like drunk drove an AA person. Anyhow, that's a different story. But we got there safely. We got there safely. We did. And I remember there was just this guy, this speaker talking, and he was talking about alcoholism. He was talking about trying to get sober, trying to stop drinking and not being able to, and all the crazy stuff he did. You know, apparently he at one point he shaved his head, right? Get rid of the hair and you get a new man or something like that. I don't know, you know, made sense to me. Maybe I'd have tried it. But he was talking about all the crazy stuff he did to try to get sober, you know? And then he was talking about being approached by people, Alcoholics Anonymous. And he started talking about a power greater than themselves. He started talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He started talking about helping another alcoholic. He had this great story about like 12-stepping a hermit. And I was like, ooh, I want a piece of that. You know, I don't know. It sounded good to me. You know? Yeah, let's go do this stuff. And I remember driving home that night. And then there was a big book in my hand. She made me pick up a chip, too, in this great big giant meeting. I don't know why I'm throwing that in, but it was just terrible. Like, they're like at the end of this giant speaker meeting with like 200 or 300 people, like, go up and pick up a chip. Terrible. But anyhow, on the way home, I'm sitting there and there's this book in my lap, and I'm just thinking, you know, I want to do this stuff. And so I did. I came back, like I said, I came back to AA and I gave it one last try, you know. And that's where I think it's talking about the requirements, that there are indeed requirements for sobriety. Because I want to tell you that I spent all that time drinking in AA. You know, the meetings don't work, the sponsor don't work, all that jazz. But I had never done AA, you know? I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat in your meetings. I listened to you talk about it. Honestly, when I first got to AA, I didn't necessarily have a problem with what you guys were saying. It was just something that I would get around to later. So, learned that lesson the hard way, you know? Apparently, if I'm an alcoholic and I am powerless over alcohol, and my only hope for sobriety is a connection with a power greater than myself, and the 12 steps are what connect me to that power, and I'm sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous and I have not taken the 12 steps, I'm on pretty shaky ground. You know, it's like walking around with a ticking time bomb. When's this thing gonna go off? I don't know. Couple of days. I got 4 months once, you know? And so I did. I came back to AA and I dove into those requirements. I dove into the 12 steps. I remember she told me, if you can't read at night, read the big book. Hint, I couldn't, or if you can't sleep at night, read the big book. I could not sleep at night. So I read the big book at night a lot, you know? And it got to this part where it started talking about the fourth step. It says, though our decision was vital and crucial, AKA the third step, it could have little permanent effect at less at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Basically, if you've made a decision that you want to do this, it's time to get busy and start writing inventory. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, you know? I needed to do the steps. And from that moment on, you could not stop me from doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was going to write inventory. I actually had to change sponsors to get an opportunity to write inventory, you know? And so I did that, and I went out, and I started to make amends. And then just exactly what it described here happened for me, right? The very same person who seemed doomed, right? So many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. You know, the obsession to drink was relieved. It just disappeared. I don't know where it went, but as far as I'm concerned, it can stay there. And that was shocking for me. I remember getting out of my first rehab facility, being terrified to do things like go into grocery stores, you know, because I might accidentally drink and mess it all up. You know what I mean? But that was just gone. I wasn't walking around fighting it, you know? It was just removed. And I was shocked by that. I was shocked and surprised, and it was completely unexpected, you know? But it did require some steps for me to follow a few simple rules and requirements, you know? Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Which one was it? This one? Yeah, that
one. Oh, oh no, this
yeah.
one.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So I'm just thinking about the end of my drinking, and I was really trying to stop. Like, I had put the drugs down finally, and I was like, I have to quit drinking. Like, every time I drink, it's out of control, or I keep scaring people. Like, why do I keep scaring people? Because I was getting creepy in the end. I think a lot of us get creepy at the end of our drinking. Like, I just would, like, stay in my boyfriend's bedroom, like, because he wouldn't want to be around me. And I would just listen to Backstreet Boys and just drink and drink and drink, like, all by myself. I don't know. It was real weird. So I wanted to quit in the end, but I would stop, and then, I don't know, just by the end of the week, I would end up drinking again somehow, you know. But the last time I drank, I was in and out of AA, and I wasn't really going to do AA. I just would show up, I don't know, just to, like, until the hangover went away, I don't know. But I was in and out, and I did hear what you guys said about trying to control your drinking. And so the last night that I drank, I was going out to the bar. It was the Blackbeard Fest in Hampton. I don't know if you guys know about that, but it's just a permission to get really shitty. I was like, I'm going to, seriously, with all intentions, I was like, I'm just only going to drink a couple tonight. I told Brandon, just come pick me up in a little bit. I'm just meeting with my friends. I'm only going to drink a few. And that was really what I was going to do. So I went there. Oh, mind you, another thing I was trying to do to stop drinking was I was working out like crazy. So you have to remember, I'm like really sore that day. So just keep that in mind. Because that was what was going to keep me sober, was like this great fitness plan. But anyways, so I told everyone at the bar, because I really like everyone to know like how messed up I am. Like, I think that'll bring me friends. But I'm like, all right, you guys, I'm a heroin addict and I'm going to control my drinking because I know I'm not an alcoholic. So they're like, okay, and like scoot over, like, what's wrong with this girl? To watch me. And you know, by the end of it, I got blackout drunk, like literally, I don't remember. I got kicked out the club because I was trying to drop it low, but y'all know I'd been doing squats like crazy and I fell, so I got kicked out of the bar. Brandon tried to pick me up. I puked in his car that he had only had for 2 weeks, a brand new car, Volkswagen Golf. It's cute. We got the smell out now, finally. And I woke up in the bed with another gal. And, you know, that wasn't that crazy of a night, to be honest. But something was different when I woke up, and I did feel truly doomed. And I felt just so, I don't know, just so ashamed and empty and alone. I think that I had like a moment of clarity or a God moment where I just saw everything for what it was. And it's like, this is going to be the rest of my life. Like this is how I'm probably going to die. And I didn't really want to live anymore. And so it's like, I just was like, all right, you know what? I guess I'm going to give Alcoholics Anonymous a chance. It had been working for my sister. My sister is an alcoholic too. And she was like a month ahead of me. And she was like not as much of a B-I-T-C-H. So I was like, okay, something is working, you know. So I was going to give it a chance. But yeah, so that's when I really came in. And I was like, you know, I'm going to follow these few simple steps. And I was ready. I really was ready this time. And luckily, like I had said earlier, we got into this doctor's opinion and I learned about myself and my true nature, you know. But I dove into these steps as quickly and as hard as I could. And it truly has saved my life. I don't know. It's crazy. Like all these years later, I'm still here. Like Cinco de Mayo just happened and I wasn't hungover. I loved being on Instagram and I would see like, oh my gosh, so hungover. I'd be like, ha. And then swipe over, like, not me. But I don't know. It's crazy that, you know, that obsession has left me. Now, have I thought about taking a drink in sobriety? Yes, I have. I'm not going to say that my sobriety is like, oh, it's gone and I'm clear and I'm good all the time. That's not me, okay? I've had a pretty wild ride in sobriety. Like, I really have, from my tonsils being taken out to postpartum depression, having a baby, just a lot of insane things, like a sick daughter, you know? And what does an alcoholic brain do? It's like, you should drink. And the thing is when that comes to my mind, I know what to do. And I call someone and I talk about it and I get through it. And that's amazing. Like, I don't know. I'm so grateful for it because, I don't know, I'm still sober today. It's wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. Our last reading is on page XXX from New World 30. All of these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been by any treatment with which we are familiar permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. You guys have a couple minutes to wrap up.
Alrighty. So, once I got it, I'm not getting rid of it. You know, if I get this phenomenon of craving, I've got this allergy to alcohol, it's going to happen for me for the rest of my life. You know, if I have a allergy to peanut, I'm not going to wake up one day and be able to have some Reese's, you know. This is a permanent thing. And so if I get it, what I need to do is not drink. Entire abstinence. We don't read it, but I kind of like the what it says right after that. So the doctor's opinion is that alcoholics can't safely drink, and so they shouldn't drink. And then it goes on to say, this immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. And I think the reason that he says that is because the doctors, they can recognize, hey, these guys need to stop, but they can't figure out how to get them stopped. Right? They're trying everything they can think of. They're writing stuff for different stuff, against different stuff. They're talking amongst each other. And then they're like, we don't know. They're screwed, you know? And I think that's why so frequently people get sent to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll wrap up with this, but actually one of my favorite things is at the last sentence of this of this little chapter, that's the right word. And this is the doctor's opinion. This is what a doctor, William D. Silkworth, who was like a big deal doctor back in the 1930s at Towns Hospital up in New York. Like, he was like the director and stuff, so he wasn't like the fuddy-duddy guy like on TV with his like 37 clip. You know what I mean? Like, he knew what he was talking about. He had worked with a lot of alcoholics. But this is his opinion. This is what a doctor thinks that alcoholics should do. I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through, and though perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. So basically, this doctor is saying, read a book and pray. Can you imagine going to a doctor's office and getting that advice? You know? I mean, they must really, really think we're screwed to be telling us that. Luckily, it works. Thank you.
I'm just going to grab this really quick. I'm Allie, I'm an alcoholic, and I don't have to keep saying that. Okay. Oh, yeah, I like this, because I was talking to David before the meeting, and he was kind of summarizing what this paragraph means, because I was freaking out. I was like, I can't share. But he really helped me out. And, you know, just about how we all have this one symptom in common. And, like, Ryan's drinking might be a little different from mine with the hiding of the booze, and I don't know if you drank daily and things like that, but I could be diagnosed more as the, what is it? Oh. Binge drinker or psychotic? Yes, that too. But the binge drinker, I didn't drink, you know, every single day, except sometimes in the summer. There were a couple summers like that. But there is something that is in common with us, in that when we start, we can't stop, and we have that feeling of like, I just have to keep going. And then once we stop, our brain just tricks us into drinking more. And I think that's, I was getting somewhere with this. David, you messed me up now. I don't know I like that I can relate to you guys with that, even though our drinking can be different. And for me, I have to always remember these things. I was a little skeptical about sharing on this because I didn't feel as grounded in step one as I have been usually. Because the other day I had like a fleeting thought about like, why can't I just like drink a little booze and just do karaoke alone in my room? You know what I mean? Like, Bela won't know, my daughter won't know, you know. But the thing is like, if I do that, let's just say that one night I did control it and I just stayed in my room. Weird, but doing karaoke. But the thing is once I start that, and I don't know, guys, I lose it. Life is not, those things in life like don't matter anymore. I get tunnel vision for the drink, and that's what it is for me. And I was gonna say one last thing. I think it is true, like for real, that this doesn't go away. One, whenever I drink in my dreams, I get blackout drunk, just saying. And two, I didn't know, okay, I got kombucha. Have you ever heard of that? I didn't know it was like 0.00% alcohol. Like, I thought it was something, you know, like salt lamps, they're like, oh, it'll calm you down. Like, I didn't think that there was actually alcohol in it. And I drank like a little bit of it and I was like, oh, I feel warm. Like, cause I didn't know anything about kombucha. And then all of a sudden I was like, I'm ready to go out. Like, what's up? Like, I want some more of this. And then I read the bottle and I was like, like poured it down the drain. So that phenomenon is still there. It has not gone away almost 4 years later. So I don't know, I'm just grateful to be here and grateful to have a way to make it through all this craziness. And I appreciate you guys for having me. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Alrighty. I am now going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
I'm Ed Calvin, I'm Ohio Valley.
Oh, Calvin.
Indian River Group meets Tuesdays at 8 o'clock at St. Pete's.
St. Peter's.
Yeah, thanks. North Military. They're looking for help. Really good meeting. Guys, that's tomorrow, Tuesdays at 8. Yeah, Indian River Group. Get there, be there, or be square. Be somewhere.
Thanks, Calvin. Jim.
Hi, my name is Jim. I'm out of Milwaukee now. The Veterans Home down in Virginia Beach is looking for people to come down there and support the disabled veterans. The meetings are on Thursdays at 6 o'clock. If anybody's interested in going down there, I have all the information. Just see me after the meeting, and I can tell you where it's at. And get me in there.
Thanks, Jim. Anybody else? All right. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
My name is Seth. I'm an
alcoholic.
Hi, Seth. Welcome.
Anybody else? All righty. We have a literature table right here to my left. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you like to purchase anything. And I accidentally skipped the Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Could I get home group members to raise their hands? Thank you. Reminders. Oops, nope. Skip that too. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please come up and talk to me. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, www.simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our panel one more time? Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step one at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is a Mexican restaurant on Colonial and 22nd. Could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
David.
Alcoholic David.
David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. For those who would like to join us, we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer.
Temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,